Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Rabbi Meir Schweiger discusses Parshat Ki Tisa and also Purim. Rabbi Meir Schweiger is a senior faculty member at Pardes and serves as the Pardes Mashkiach Ruchani, the spiritual guide for Pardes. And now, Rabbi Meir Schweiger.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha is Parshat Ki Tisa. In previous podcasts, we have examined the central topic of the Parsha, the story of the golden calf. Once again, I would like to revisit this story, but focus on a particular aspect and see the larger ramifications thereof. Chapter 32, verse 1. And the people saw that Moshe was delaying in coming down from the mountain, and they gathered upon Aaron, and they said to him, "Arise, make to us gods who will walk before us. For this man Moshe, who took us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him." And in verse 2, Aaron responds and says to them, "Remove the jewelry, the rings of gold, from the ears of your women, your sons, your daughters, and bring them to me." And the people respond in verse 3. They remove those rings of gold which were in their ears, and they bring them to Aaron. And then in verse 4, Aaron takes the material from their hands. He fashions it with an engraving tool. He makes it into a molten calf. And the people say, "These are your gods, Israel, who took you up from the land of Egypt." Today I want to focus on the word Masecha, which appears in verse 4. Egel Masecha. I have translated it, as appears in many translations and commentaries, as a molten calf. The word Masecha, if you look it up in a dictionary, is translated as something which has been cast, shaped, formed. The reason why I want to focus on this word is because in modern Hebrew, this is a word for a mask. And this week, we are celebrating Purim, the time when people masquerade, dress up in all types of costumes. What is a mask? What is a costume? Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch, a commentary that I've mentioned in a number of podcasts, the leading spokesman for Orthodox Jewry, German Jewry, in the 19th century, develops a very profound idea in this section, namely, what is idolatry? His definition is, idolatry is, and I'm paraphrasing this, people molding God in the image of man or in some other image, versus things or people being in the image of God. The core of idolatry is subjective. And he goes on to elaborate that idolatry is rooted in somehow trying to shape God, but not only shape God, control God. Man is at the core, is at the center, and God is out there to be shaped and molded in order to further the will of man. The idea that I am now creating this mold of a calf, the idea that by creating that mold, we can now proclaim, "These are the gods who took you out of Egypt," is a way of saying that we ultimately are the ones who are in control. And Rabbi Hirsch goes on to say that this is in fact an inversion of what is a central belief in Judaism. That in fact, God is the one who is in control. Man is there to serve God. Man is in the image of God. In a previous podcast, I mentioned that when you look at the circumstances that produce the golden calf, the people are in a situation of crisis. Moshe, who the people saw as a semi-god, has disappeared. Their world has been shattered. The people feel extremely vulnerable. Where do they go? What do they do? And from that place of helplessness, of weakness, they go to the other extreme. They try to empower themselves by gathering upon Aaron, by in effect creating the mold, dictating the image of God that they are seeking. As we've noted in the past, the people should have consulted with Aaron. The people should have sought out God. It would have been perfectly legitimate for the people to cry out, to acknowledge that they were lost, and to seek direction. But instead of acknowledging their weakness, they created a mask, a delusion of empowerment. Later on in chapter 34, verse 18, God says, Elohim masecha lo ta'aselach, cast gods, do not make to you. And here I would like to emphasize to you, it isn't just do not make them, but not make them to you, to empower you, to further you. Do not shape God in the image you have of God. I would like to jump now to something which appears at the end of the parsha. When Moses comes down from the mountain and brings the second set of tablets, this is chapter 34, verse 29. As I mentioned, Moshe comes down from the mountain and brings the second set of tablets. And Moshe did not know that the skin of his face was radiating when God spoke to him. And in verse 30, Aaron and all the Jewish people see Moshe, and behold, the skin of his face is radiating, and they are afraid to approach him. And I will insert, Moshe has the appearance of a godlike figure, the sense of awe, the fear. Moshe is generating something which is supernatural. And in verse 31, Moshe calls out to them, and they come return to him, Aaron and the princes, and Moshe speaks to them. And then soon, the general Jewish population comes near, and Moshe then commands them all that God had spoken to him at Mount Sinai. And now verse 33, which is what interests me. And when Moshe finished speaking to them, he puts on his face masveh. In modern Hebrew, masveh is camouflage. The commentaries understand a masveh as being some form of cover, veil. One could even say a mask. And then we're told in verse 34, and when Moshe came before God to speak to him, he would remove the veil until he left. And then he would go and speak to the Jewish people all that he had been commanded. And the people would see the face of Moshe, that it was radiating. And then afterwards, Moshe would return the veil upon his face until once again he spoke to God. And once again, I want to rely on Rabbi Hirsch's commentary. And he says the purpose of this veil, of this mask, is to express Moshe's humility. Namely, the people should not see Moshe's radiating face as being something which is self-generated. The people should not see Moshe as being a godlike figure. From beginning to end, the people should see Moshe as being the servant of God. Moshe will allow them to see his beaming face when he speaks the word of God. And if we can just, for a moment, close our eyes, take in the image. Moshe goes before God. He removes the veil. He allows somehow the presence of God to totally envelop him, to radiate him. And he now becomes the conduit which brings that radiation, that spirit of God, to the people. But for the people to be able to make that connection, they have to see Moshe's face beaming, radiating, as he speaks the word of God. But once he has finished uttering the word of God, he puts on the veil. And here I would like to say, the mask is not a delusion. The mask is trying to prevent delusions. Moshe wants it to be clear to the people that he is not God. He is simply the go-between, the medium that can bring them into that I-thou encounter. Now I would like to jump to our parsha. I would like to jump to the story of Purim, Megillat Esther. The one place in the Megillah where it is made perfectly clear that there is a masquerade going on is in chapter 2, verse 10. When the king is rounding up all of the beautiful women, and Esther is then brought to the king's palace, we are told that Esther does not tell anyone who her people are, what her birthplace is, because Mordechai commanded her that she should not tell. Esther basically masquerades. She wears a mask. And in fact, no one is able to penetrate that mask. No one knows who is she really until the moment comes for her to remove that mask. And that comes later on when Mordechai tells her she must go to see the king. She ultimately must reveal who she is and save the Jewish people. And in fact, Esther is very reluctant to do so. And this is in chapter 4. When Mordechai says to her in chapter 4, verse 8, Mordechai says, you must go to the king, plead the case of your people. And Esther says, but what if I come before the king and he does not spread forth his scepter? I will die. And Mordechai says to Esther in verse 14, if you are silent at this time, salvation will come to the Jewish people from another place, and you and your father's house will perish. And who knows, if not for this moment, you have reached royalty. And so Mordechai sets in motion the process where Esther ultimately takes off the mask. First she comes to Ahasuerus, invites him to one party, then invites him to a second party. And only in chapter 7, at the second party, when the king says, what is it that you want? Does Esther take off the mask and say to him, give me my life, give me my people, for we have been sold, chapter 7, verse 4. We have been sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be eradicated. I bring this point up because Purim raises a very basic question, should raise a very basic question for all of us. What are the masks that we wear? To what degree is it that we live in a world of delusion? I brought this one example of Esther, but in fact, the whole framework of the story is a world of masks. Things are not what they seem to be. Later on in the Megillah, in chapter 9, there is a phrase, V'nahafochu. It was turned upside down. The day in which the enemies of the Jews were supposed to kill the Jews is the very same day where the Jews are given the mandate to kill their enemies. But that expression characterizes the world of Ahasuerus. It is a world which is topsy-turvy. It is a world of delusion. What you see is not real. The question becomes, how much do I go along with that environment? Or at what point am I able to then cut through? And perhaps the message of the Megillah is that for salvation to come, we need to take off the masks. We have to remove the delusions. God's name is never mentioned in the Megillah. And yet the rabbis say that every time in the Megillah it says the king, that is an allusion to God. Ostensibly, the king in the Megillah is Ahasuerus, who at the very beginning is described as being an extremely powerful individual. He rules over 127 kingdoms from one end of the earth to the other. And yet as we read the story, we see that this is a farce. He's an extremely weak individual who in fact is manipulated by everyone around him, who does not have a mind of his own. So who really is the king? The rabbis say that the elaborate descriptions given in the beginning of the book, all the tapestries, all the utensils, the garments, were in fact all taken from the temple. And in fact, if you look at the language, there are many, many parallels to the parshiot that we are in that describe the utensils of the tabernacle, that describe the priestly garments. And the rabbis say that Ahasuerus arrogated to himself that world. He became the high priest. His palace became the temple. But who is he worshiping? And I come back to how I began our session today. Ahasuerus was certainly not worshiping God, and it does not seem to be that there was any person that he could be worshiping. The bottom line is that he was worshiping himself. Self-worship at the core of idolatry. Self-worship which creates delusions, which creates a lot of masks, a lot of costumes. In many ways, Megillat Esther is a satire of the world that we live in. It reflects a world where people are deeply embedded in masquerading. The goal of the Torah, the purpose of the mitzvot, is to remove those masks, to be able to break down the barriers between what is real and what is illusion, so that what we see is real, what we experience is real. Our rabbis have taught that when you have a leap year, you always read the Megillah in the second Adar. The reason being that we want to juxtapose the redemption of Purim to the redemption of Pesach. The redemption of Purim, which was orchestrated by people, to the redemption of Pesach, which is orchestrated by God. Perhaps the rabbis wanted to show us, by emphasizing this connection, that maybe we need to look at the story of Purim, revisit it, and see that in fact, what seems to be a redemption of people is truly a redemption brought about by God. As much as the people are active, ultimately there is God who's behind the scenes, who reinforces their actions and creates the realities. May we put on our costumes on Purim. May we rejoice. And as we do so, ask ourselves the question, who are we really? How do we really want other people to see us? And is that who we really are? Purim and Yom Kippur, two bookends that can bring you to the same place, to know who you are and ultimately bring about redemption. Shabbat Shalom, Purim Sameach.
Thank you, Rabbi Schweiger. Your comments on the podcast are always appreciated, so please send an email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Purim Sameach, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.